All right. That's Lou Donaldson. And this is taken from the complete Lou Donaldson sessions from 1957-1960. And that is titled Lou's Blues. Lou Donaldson is, of course, on saxophone, Blue Mitchell on trumpet, Horace Parlon on piano. I can't even read my own writing here. Layman Jackson on bass, Dane Bailey on drums, and Ray Barreto on congas. I comment about this quite a lot when we see the crossover in the music world. It's like the perfect example of how people collaborate with each other. There's no problem there. Music is what they're after. Music is what they're doing. And if you're good at the music that you play, come on, let's make some beautiful music together. It really, to this day, I'm fascinated and really comforted by the many, many instances in which we see musicians, all creeds, all colors, all stripes, all political feelings, getting together and making beautiful music. And this is yet another example. We see that a lot in jazz. Lots of crossover. People are interested in the music. They don't want to hear about, you know, your peculiarities, your political gripes. It's just sit down behind the piano and make it work. That's what it's all about. So this is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today is a pretty sad day for the nation, which says goodbye, finally goodbye, to a stalwart military leader and diplomat and soldier, Colin Powell. Memorial service is being held at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and it is quite something. And in a sense, you almost forget how this country works, even for him and his time. He didn't have it easy as a black man of Jamaican extraction and bent on a career and invested in that career. He wanted to be a soldier, and that's what he was. That's what he was. Brought great honor to this country. Many times, the country not deserving it. But by the way he conducted himself and represented this country, he was able to restore some semblance of credibility and dignity to the United States by the way he conducted himself. So, I'm not a saluter, but my thing is we should just pause and say thank you and Godspeed today. 888-874-4888. You can start calling in, as today is Free Your Mind Friday. Now, what is Free Your Mind Friday? It is set aside for people who listen to this program regularly. And maybe you don't listen regularly, but you have something important to say that you would like to share. This is not a program for yammering. It is not a silly program. We are making available to people who have something to say. And this is the time to make your points. You choose your topic. I don't get involved in that. But I listen to tell myself, is it worth listening to this person? Did this person invest in the presentation? And we've been talking about this for a long time, and I'm getting a bit more stringent about how you use your airtime. It is not for silliness. It is not for trite stuff. It is for a considered opinion. You should have an opinion. Now, whether people agree or disagree is immaterial. The main thing is that you do a very good job, a creditable job, in making your presentation to support your thesis. Okay, this I say this all the time. I'm not telling you what to say, but I'll tell you if what you're saying makes no sense whatsoever. And you will know that because there will be silence on the air. I'm getting a bit more stringent about this because things that come easily to people very often are not appreciated. They just think, hey, well, you know, I could get on the radio and I can say what I have to say. Well, there's a cost to that. You don't assume the cost, most of us. You're not supporting the station. You're not a member of the station, but the station still makes available to you an avenue in which, through which you can share an opinion. But that opinion ought to be worth sharing. If you're not making sense, sorry, we're going to have to cut you off. If you're not understanding how important it is to appreciate the fact that you have access to a radio station that goes all over the world, and if this is now, you know, it's kind of ordinary to you, you go ahead and do your own thing. But I'm expecting a certain level of performance. I'm expecting that by the time you get on air, you have some notes, you are prepared, you have a subject, and you are proceeding along the lines that you tell us you're going to be proceeding. You, of course, don't have all the time on this program today. It is for you to give us in a short snapshot of time what your opinion is about a particular subject. I stress all the time, it doesn't matter whether you are, quote, right or wrong, unquote. It matters only that you do the job. And the job is you set out and you make plain what it is you're going to talk about from, of course, your perspective. And if people agree or disagree, they will know. But it is not time to fool around. This is very expensive time. You're not being charged to express your opinion on a world stage. So understand that I take it very seriously. And we are ratcheting up the quality of the presentations. I would expect that you, in some way or the other, have prepared your presentation. We should hear facts. We should hear references. We should hear an indication that you have actually taken time to bolster your argument and to prepare yourself. If you haven't, please don't even get on the air, because I will take you off. You're playing around with a very, very expensive, quote, toy, unquote. And I don't have any patience for that. We're long past the stage in which people are just being, you know, talking off the top of your head. Go talk off the top of your head somewhere else. This is going to be a demand now that if you are going to have access to airtime, it better be worth it. And we better see and hear something that suggests you have prepared your presentation. I know it sounds a little rough, but you see, I'm tired of mediocrity. And this is one of the fatal flaws in media across the board, print, electronic, whatever. People just are fascinated by the idea that they can talk. And so they talk. There's no rhyme or reason to what they're talking about. And it is clear they haven't respected even their own opinion enough to prepare a cogent presentation. So that is what Free Your Mind Friday is all about. We suspend our regular programming format, and we open up the entire program to people who have something to say that is worth listening to. Whether people agree or disagree, that's up to them. But your job is to be very precise and very clear about what you're saying, and of course, very short. You don't have the whole program to yourself. 888-874-4888. When you get on, tell us what it is that you're going to be talking about, and then proceed. But keep in mind, keep it brief, and keep it sharp. All right, we start with Jackie from Brooklyn. Hello, Jackie, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon to you, Utrice, and the listening family. I want to comment about the jury selection in the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia, where they have one African-American person on the jury panel. And I really think people need to pay attention to what district attorneys do when they bring these cases, because they have a right, both attorneys have a right to challenge the jury array. And for to try such a case with one African-American person on the jury panel is an absolute disgrace. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we go over there to, I think it's in Michigan. Anyway, the guy who came from another state with long arms and shot protesters, and now the judge has ruled that the people who were shot should not be referred to as victims. And he's claiming through his attorney that he came from another state to protect the property of the property owners against the protesters. And some of the people were marching and protesting peacefully. So I just hope and just really hope that people would just become more aware of the whole tenor of the so-called criminal justice system in the United States. It goes from state
to
state.
But that isn't the problem, is it? Whether people are aware or not, that isn't the problem. The problem is, and you're raising the question, so I'd like to hear your analysis of it. What is, in your view, objectionable about the issues that you raise?
Okay, first of all, you know, I don't think people understand. Well, I can't only speak for me, Jackie, in Brooklyn. There's state law and there are federal laws. And when you see that a trial is beginning in an unbalanced way, then that brings into question, what is the district attorney or the prosecutor doing in that particular case?
Had referred it to the judge, as you know, and the judge has basically taken the position that he is not pleased with the racial composition of the jury in the Ahmaud Arbery case. He's not pleased with the jury that has been selected to hear this case. However, this is what he says, he cannot rule at the moment that there is reason to predict that something will go wrong.
No, I don't have a problem with
people's prejudices.
Everybody has their role in all of this, and it's not the judge's role to impanel the jury and challenge the jury. That is the role of the attorneys that's involved in the case. And this is what I'm saying. What district attorney or prosecutor in their right mind would allow such a panel to be to go forth? The judge can only do so much. The judge has to rule on, you know, the evidence that's presented. And again, the judge has to be careful.
Yes, but you're missing a point, and it's a very dicey little point, but it's not a little point, it's a big point. How is one supposed to be able to predict how a juror would vote in a case strictly on the basis of race?
No one can predict that, but there is...
That's what the judge is saying.
No one can predict how a juror is going to rule, is going to, you know, come to a decision. But it's not the judge's role anyway to challenge the panel. It's the attorneys that are selecting the jurors. And this is where I have a real issue, because it's just like what happened when Breonna Taylor was killed by the police, and then the state prosecutor, he found that the police didn't do anything wrong. Everyone has to understand what the roles of these people are who have these positions, and make sure that they are not elected or reelected to these offices, because they do not serve.
It's a dicey situation in one sense, and that is you have to look at the facts of the case as it unfolds. You can't just arbitrarily say, okay, we have a jury of 11 whites and one black person, therefore this case shouldn't even go forward, because immediately we can see the racial disparity. And if we can see the racial disparity now, we are safe in predicting the racial disparity in their votes at the end of the trial. Who can guarantee that?
No one can guarantee that, but there are legal objections that the attorneys can make based on prior cases and case law that says this is not an appropriate panel. This panel doesn't reflect the community. And see, this is where I have, you know, a lot of people, they feel, oh, well, the prosecutor. Yes, the prosecutors and the court system, they have wide latitude. But we have to be aware of what each person's role is, what they can and cannot do before these cases start. Because at the end,
we also have to be very careful. This is why the case is headed that way. You want the judge or the prosecutor or any other person playing a major role in this trial to make a determination up front. That itself may give ammunition to critics who, even before the trial starts, will predict that the trial is bogus. Based on what? This is the question. This is why it's a dicey situation.
Not a panel that reflects.
If you're saying that by virtue of a person's race, you can't predict how that person thinks.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that by virtue of the panel composition, the history of racial relations the issue that's in that particular case about the racial animus and tracking him just because he's a black man jogging. All of this, all these racial overtones is an intricate part of the case. The judge has to be very careful, because if he doesn't, then they'll appeal him and say, oh, well, the judge was biased. So everybody has to be careful.
That's the whole point. But the judge cannot preempt that decision. And this is what is posing a little problem right now. The judge cannot presuppose that the racial makeup of the jury right now is going to predict the outcome of the case. But he has made it known that this is a major question. How is it in a community that is diverse? Yes, you have large populations of whites, you have a large population of blacks, but when it comes to a trial, why is it so lopsided, so disturbingly lopsided? The judge is not in charge of that.
I agree, but that's where the prosecutor's role comes in. And see, that's what happens in so many of these DAs and prosecutors' office. Instead of them standing outside and being independent in their own right, many of them work in close collusion with the police, the community. I don't know if this particular jurisdiction he has to be elected or what. But what they think about is the politics of everything. And they're not thinking about the person who's the crime victim, the person that was
killed. But all of that, In this instance that we're discussing, all of that is outside. I mean, these are other issues that will come in to play. But the main issue is how is it that a judge can allow the reasoning that a jury has to have a particular composition or else the decision of that jury is to be held suspect? He cannot make that decision.
There are cases, there are federal and state cases that address this issue.
But they're not trying federal and state cases. They're trying this case.
I understand that. But they have an obligation, and I'm not criticizing the judge. I'm criticizing the prosecutor for allowing that to happen. The same way, I can't think of the state where the young man came in with the guns and shot the, I don't know if it's Wisconsin. It's the same issue. The judge moves on what terminology shall be used, how shall the crime victims...
And there's a reason for that. You see, this is the point. There's a reason when the judge says you may not use this word to describe people. You may not use that word to describe people. It's a prejudicial word. And it makes a judgment about those people. So as a judge, he has to maintain a certain impartiality, and that the trial itself maintain a certain impartiality. So he stepped forward and said, you may not call these people robbers or looters or anything like that, or victims. You have to use a neutral word.
Well, I'm going to tell you, everybody's going to be in an uproar when, going back to the Georgia case, the Aubrey case, when those people are acquitted, then we'll be out in the street hollering and screaming and marching. And the same thing with the case in Wisconsin. What happens?
Yes, but they're missing the point. They're missing a major part of this point. And the point is, we are assuming certain things, not in a case of this magnitude and with this much exposure. Everything, you cough, people are taking note of that. you wipe your eyes, people are thinking you're sending secret signals, whatever. Right. But it is a very charged situation, and everybody has to be on their P's and Q's. All right. So thank you so much for getting us started today.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Gwen, you're on the air from New York.
Oh, hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
Well, I'd like to jump on that conversation, but I'm going to try to stay with what I want to talk about because I've had two things that I've been pondering this week. Freedom of speech on the radio.
Don't forget what your charge is to present a point of view.
Okay, here is my point of view.
Our regular discussion, you're taking an editorial position and you're explaining why.
Okay. I wonder if some of the speech that has been in the media and the radio and even print could be held up to the same criteria as hate speech is in the law. And why I say this is I continue to hear people on the radios saying outrageous things. And one of the things that I heard said was on WBAI, there was a guy that was on very early in the morning, and he was talking about somebody's, a man who gotten sick, and his wife had to go to court to get a court order for this man to get ivermectin. And she got the court order and got the ivermectin, but the man died anyway. And so the radio announcer said, good. It's good that he's gone because he was just another racist anyway. Well, it turned out that the guy was black. He wasn't a racist. He was a black guy. And his wife didn't feel comfortable with the other protocols, and she wanted ivermectin. And I've heard so many people speak in that way. I've heard commentators on WBAI and other places that speak about people that don't want to have this shot in a way that is so maligning that it almost could be construed or made into hate speech. And I'll tell you why. Because they're creating a group of people, the thems. And that's very dangerous. That's putting people who are not interested in a mandate or taking a vaccine, they are the other. And they are helping to build this bonfire of hatred against people that are just exercising their free will to not have something put in them that they wish not to. So I was just, you know, I've been thinking about it because I keep hearing more and more openly, outwardly hostile. And it's also really troubling to me because many of the people I hear say these things are the people that for years have been talking about civil rights and taking up for the underdog. And now I hear them with such hatred and not knowing who they're talking to or just making assumptions.
You just said something that's paradoxical. You said he was a black guy. He wasn't a racist. How do you know?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. He could have been a racist. I don't know that.
This is what
he could have been a racist.
This is how the language.
But I made the same mistake. I made the same mistake as the author, as the person on the radio. So the person on the radio assumed that the guy who didn't want to take the shot was white. He assumed that. So he also assumed that he was a racist. But it's really troubling to hear this because many people that don't want to take the shot are not thinking about political issues. They want to not take something that could hurt them. That's why they don't want to take
it. But
there's not enough evidence out
there. So what is your position? Are you talking about a general attitude towards
my position?
Yes.
Okay, my position,
generally, attitude.
Okay, as a person who is now one of the thems, I'm getting really upset about this, and I'm getting really angry that without anybody knowing who I am, taking and making assumptions about who I am, and making this, creating this this hostility among other people who have chosen to take the shot, but you know, and basically turning them against people like myself. And I think that that should be considered hate speech because I think the nature of hate speech is about people that have been in a separate group and they've been treated with very hostile words. And, you know, it does go into freedom of speech. I understand that. But, you know, you have to be really careful because
Don't go any further. Let's compartmentalize so we know in a methodical way how you're approaching this. Okay, so your premise is that this kind of speech should be considered hate speech as well.
considered. I think the word, the operative word there is considered. I think we should we should look at this and ask ourselves: may this hit the criteria of what hate speech is? Does it? I don't know, but it's something that's been on my mind. I don't know if it meets the criteria to be hate speech, but I do know that more and more it's getting to be used in such a broad fashion, so openly hostile. And it makes me feel very nervous. I was on WNYC the other day, and I could not believe what this commentator said, you know, about my comments. He asked me a question about whether I was whether I had any reservations about vaccines, and I explained to him I'd taken all my vaccines. But when my nephew got autism, I said, you know, questions. I started to have questions. When I got off the radio, he said, well, there you go. There goes an anti-vaxxer. Now, I didn't say I was an anti-vaxxer. I said I had questions after my nephew had autism. And
what did you do? What did you do after you got off the air and you heard this comment? Did you have any further contact with the broadcaster?
No. What happens on that show is they wait till you're done speaking, and then they mute you so you can't speak, and they don't bring you back on. So I had no defense on my side to say, wait a minute. That's not true. There were three things that he said that were blatantly untrue. And if people had been listening to the conversation carefully, the three things he said were just not true. So he then went on to say, and autism, we know, has been debunked. As there's nothing to do with vaccines. That's not true either. There have been doctors that worked at the CDC, Dr. William Thompson, that admitted for 10 years they did studies about autism and the relationship to vaccines, and it was concluded it does have a relationship to the vaccines.
Yes, but you are bundling a whole bunch of things.
Okay.
And we don't know what it is that you're debating. We don't know what it is you're against and what you want done.
I was trying to cite examples, so obviously that's not clear for you. Okay, so the only thing I'm saying to you is this, is that I feel that we ought to start looking at the way people are being maligned and ask ourselves if, in fact, this reaches the criteria to be hate speech, and that maybe somebody should step up to the plate and just start suing some of these companies that are doing this, because it's really getting uncomfortable out here. And I don't particularly like to be seen as the other. And I certainly want to have a say. Whatever you're saying about me, I think that you ought to know what's really in my heart and soul before you go out there and talking about me. And, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm not a right winger. I'm not any of the things
you keep
calling
them. Not necessary. You see, here's the thing, and this is very important and instructive for how do you determine what exactly is your point that you are going to debate. It doesn't have to be complicated. Straight ahead, very simple to understand. What is your complaint?
Okay. My point is I consider it to be hate speech, period. I consider it to be hate speech.
Good.
I think it's divisive.
And because you
because
you believe it to be tantamount to hate speech, what then is the responsibility of any medium that disseminates or that plays a major role in spreading this hate speech?
Well, I think if you want to talk about the facts, that's fine. But I think calling people names while you're in the back of a microphone on the radio is a very irresponsible thing to do. I think that to group people, all people that take this position, into one group of crazies. I've heard the word crazies used by David Rothenberg on WBAI, insane people. I've heard all kinds of very derogatory remarks, and they don't sound.
I think
they're accurate.
You have a point, but I don't think you have defined it well. If you're making a point, it has to be simple, straightforward, direct. Anybody could understand it. But you're lumping activism
you know
and you know, media and all of this together, so it comes out as one big jumble. You have to refine your focus here. What is most important to you to communicate to media organizations based on what you have determined?
What I've determined is it looks to me that like they are trying to create a group of people that everybody can unload on and taunt and make fun of because of a position they've taken about a medicine, not a political position, but about a medicine and an illness. And I think if you want to speak about, if you want to speak in a credible way about this, that you should not, you should refrain from the name calling, the jokes, and basically the creation of a group known as the other. Because
okay.
I think once we get to the other
let me just put this out to you and tell me whether this makes sense. You're saying something and then you're not saying something. It's all jumbled. When you have an opinion about something, you identify the problem. You define the problem as closely as you can.
Well,
what then?
What I can say to you is what I can say is obviously I'm not in this particular case. I am not building a case in a way that is at least you understand. But what's scary and troubling to me right now is that when I hear people on the radio that for many years I thought very credible, taking positions that sound like they are malicious, they are mean-spirited, and making a group
you
of people
defining
that are
finding the problem and yet completely avoiding the
central issue. I think that in this case, I can't make this case. That's what I think. I just have a feeling about it
because you have
upset.
You are making
I got to say something. I'm not. It didn't. I understand what you're doing is you're giving instructions, but for me. On Free Your Mind Friday, it's been bothering me all week. I've been hearing people all week on WBAI radio, on WNYC, on the TV. And you want to know something? I feel like the circle is getting smaller and smaller. And I feel like one day I'm going to have to start walking into
groups again,
of people.
You're missing the point.
Well, and I think the point is that I'm not doing a good job building the case.
Even as you make the point, you're missing it.
It's stumbling.
The issue that you are raising inevitably is that there's a woeful lack of control in the newsroom about the purpose, you know, how you influence public opinion. Who's in charge? Who is the editor? Who are the program directors?
Right.
Who is allowing this to be determined as and spread as information? That's not the way it used to be.
No, and it's carefully orchestrated,
okay.
too. Because as I said,
yes, orchestrated. They're doing or conducting a program in the broad sense of it. You're talking about the way it affects you, but you are refusing yourself to make the connection. Somebody's not doing their job.
Possibly, but maybe somebody is doing their job because maybe that is what's happening. When
I hear Brian Lehrer speak on
WNYC, it sounds like
somebody is not doing their job. No media organization obtains a license with the presumption that their job is to contaminate people's minds.
I don't know, Utrice, because you would have a very hard time getting on WNYC radio today.
Yes,
on the other side of the issue.
Where it has descended to. That's the bottom line that it has descended to. And just about everybody is doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, your argument should be that we need to reexamine values of journalism. What is the purpose of journalism? And we need to begin to take action against outlets that seem to have a whole other agenda other than encouraging the dissemination of information and exchange of information, but influencing in the old sense of propaganda, that
exactly
it is in form of mind control. And you need to, that's the question that you're raising. Do you not understand that?
Yes, but you know, I guess it dawned on me for the last, just for who I am, just me, that a lot of times it takes me a couple of tries out the barn, and then I finally nail it. Of course, you can't do that on the radio. You don't have, you know, I don't have time. You don't have time, and I don't. But I find this happening with me personally, is that most of the time I can argue my cases pretty well or make my cases. But this is such a slippery slope.
When you take what you have said and you formalize it and you submit it to those federal authorities that have to do with licensing and media organizations that are right in line with what you're saying, they don't like it either. I don't like what I see as journalism. It's across the board. It's horrible.
Right.
But if there is no articulation of it, people would just ignore it.
Well, I think it's a good lawsuit, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to get into court and
Forget lawsuit.
It's hard to write a letter and get them to change anything. You know, I think you want to get the spotlight.
But again. What do you want to accomplish?
What I want to accomplish is I want fair exchange, what you just said, of information. I would like to be able to also get on with the same amount of time.
Then you're making the wrong argument. No, what you just said is, I want the right to do exactly the same rotten stuff that they're doing.
No, I was not. Let me make this clear. First of all, no, I don't want the right to call people's names, so I didn't make that clear. Now, that's not what I want. Ultimately, I don't want that at all. I want that to totally stop. I want these stations to stop calling people names, to stop calling them crazy, to stop assuming their identities. I want all that to stop, for sure. And then after that stops, I think we should come to the table with a fair exchange of information, which means that maybe you have somebody like Gary Noel on a show, and then you have somebody else on the other side of the issue speaking about it and debating the issue, with both parties being able to weigh in equally, so that the public can actually,
I don't believe in that.
Based on information.
I don't believe there's this issue and then there's that issue. I believe there's an issue. Let them define where they stand on the issue or an issue. Mm-hmm. We have people, rank amateurs, basically corrupting what used to be a noble profession. It used to be.
Yeah,
I have had the same problem within the media myself. What is passing for journalism? You want? I used to train people. I can't agree with you more, but you have to be clear about what it is you define as the problem, and what it is you define as a solution. And put it in writing. This is what it is I think must be done.
Well, who do you think, say I wanted to write to WNYC Radio, who I'm not familiar with this part of it, the back end of it. Who do you write to? I don't know who the president of the station is or.
So you look it up. You go to the library and look it up.
Right. But I guess a program director is what you're looking for. I mean, I don't mean I don't know how to look things up. I mean, you know, everybody has a department where they go. I guess I feel like it would be okay to do that, except for it will be ignored. I can guarantee you that. Because I don't think this is happening randomly.
you have to.
I will disagree with you on that. I don't think that people are just doing this, and getting away with it. I think there is an agenda to make sure that this gets played out and people are being ostracized.
Is there right now, to your knowledge, any record of anybody annotating all these things to say, I'm watching you, and this is what you're doing, and this is what you have already done?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. The idea is take responsibility for what it is you're complaining about. Take responsibility for correcting it and do it in a way where there is likely to be no credible objection. How could they object? You could produce that this person called a protester a jerk, and this is the level that they're functioning at? No. Their licenses need to be revoked. They should be playing games. You know, it is not enough simply to make a complaint.
I agree with you, but I guess I also wanted to put it out there. I wanted to see what other people were thinking. Were other people thinking the same thing as I, or do they think this is a crazy idea?
It doesn't matter. If you are in the majority of one, you're important enough to support your position.
Well, I thank you. I'm glad, because I think that on this I'm right.
It's not about whether you're right or wrong. It is about how well you justify your position.
Right.
Are you making sense? Would your letter or your missive cause an organization to take another look at itself? This is what we have to consider. We want people to do things, but why? We started off the program today about the lack of diversity in a jury about to hear a trial. But only two questions. You just ask one or two questions, and you know right off the bat there's trouble, because people haven't thought things through. They think they have the answer. They think that they can, wage a battle, but that you can't wage a battle. You first have to identify what's wrong. You got to come with science. Here's what we know. Here's what you say. We have to completely overhaul our battle plans. We're not doing well in that department.
Well, at least we're trying.
Okay, that's good enough for the time being.
Come on, at least we're trying.
We really have to move forward on it. We have to move forward. Thanks so much for your call today.
Thank you.
Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
How are you today, Eutrice?
Okay, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Always an honor, always a pleasure. I'm going to speak about something very specific in this whole biosecurity state situation that the world finds itself in, which is just kind of the boring topic of masks, and particularly masks as it pertains to children. Now, I'm about to pick up my 3-year-old son from preschool as soon as I get off this call, and he has to wear a mask all day long, and this is the second year of him being educated with a mask on. And I strongly believe that there's no medical basis for this, and that actually this practice is extremely unhealthy, and particularly for children who don't know how to change their mask or follow other medical protocols that an adult would be able to follow. So, for example, my son, I was noticing at the end of school, he has a runny nose, and to me, I attribute it to the mask wearing and being forced to wear what the end of the day, a very dirty mask, because the teacher, you know, is not a medical professional. She's trying to teach the class the difficulty of wearing a mask herself and has all these kids that she's responsible for. And, you know, it's not officially in her job description to, you know, exchange PPE equipment for her students. So at the end of the day, my son has a mask with saliva on it, with mucus on it, and he has a runny nose. And I noticed over the weekend, he doesn't have a runny nose. He's able to breathe. And it, to me, it's a pretty clear correlation with the mask. And I've heard Dr. Shiva say that he actually did a nice discussion on it several months ago, which was the discussion of how masks affect the microbiome of the mouth. So that's the type of thing that we're not getting any discussion about in our mainstream outlets or from the governing bodies. They're not discussing the potential harm of wearing a mask for extended periods of time. If you're a student, for example, wearing it for 8 consecutive hours, and kids in gym class wearing masks, and in the yard wearing masks, and there's, you know, again, no evidence of outdoor transmission of the virus in general. It's strangely a virus that transmits itself indoors. And, you know, last year at his school, there was a 10-day shutdown of the school because of a COVID case. And I just find this to be fanaticism at a certain point. No one was hospitalized, thankfully. No one died, thankfully. There was one case. They shut down the entire school for 10 days. And now, on the basis of that, we're going to continue with all of this ridiculous protocol. Like every time I drop off my son from school, I have to fill out a medical form saying I'm not feverish. I was not tested positive for COVID-19. I haven't been in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. And it just becomes a very sort of bizarre exercise of insanity. I mean, you know, if I've answered the same questions every day in the same manner every day, and the answers are the same every day, I mean, at what point can I just say, hey, well, look, if the answers are any different, I'll notify you. And it's troubling on both sides because for me, I'm being inconvenienced and it's annoying and an actual waste of time. And it also concerns me that this is what the authorities have come up with to keep us safe. Is this kind of...
Okay, but let me ask you straight. What is your difficulty with the situation as it is now?
My difficulty in a broader social sense is that I think we're being conditioned into just a sort of dehumanizing process. I think the natural human face is an unmasked face. And if someone chooses to wear a mask, you know, for whatever reason, to protect themselves in closed quarters, okay, I respect everybody's choice, but these things should in no way be mandated. And the evidence supporting them is very weak. If you ask people to show
evidence. We don't know. Here's the thing. We have not had thorough accounting of anything on either side of the issue. We get anecdotal accounts, and we get personal accounts and whatnot, but we are stuck. Because people are not approaching this thing methodically. We don't have anybody speaking for the public. So it is a matter that you would do X, Y, and Z, and somebody would do A, B, and C, but in two different worlds affecting, you know, populations that you don't know, you're not connected, it is a horrible thing. But the question is, what do you want?
I want people to just basically drop the absurdity of mask wearing. Because from a technical point of view,
It's not going to happen. People, it is not an absurdity because, guess what? The system has had infinite numbers of ways to affirm it and to make it legitimate and appealing and legal. And they have the wherewithal to remind people that it would be their fault if they or their children get sick. That's it. These are powerful weapons.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different views on this, however. There are people who are strongly opposed, strongly in favor.
But they're winning.
Very lukewarm people.
They're winning with their views. You don't have the money. We don't have the capital. You don't have the organization. You don't have the access to media. You don't have all of the paraphernalia that reinforces things that you strongly disagree with. You don't have it.
That's totally true.
So what do you
that's
do?
Totally correct. That's the $1 million question, Truth. That's the $1 million
question. It is. It's a $1 million question.
Well, I recommend everybody look into the comments of Dr. Lee Merritt, look into the comments of Beta Stadler, look into the comments of Dr. Carl Hennigan, and, you know, from a technical point of view, masks actually just don't work. That's another thing, is that any study that you show is a mechanistic study, so to speak. It shows someone coughing or sneezing and the content being stopped by the mask.
Is there
but it doesn't show you the usage
you
of masks
so
in society.
Far? Is there anything that you have read so far that strikes you as innovative and extraordinary?
In general, yeah, I would say maybe relevant or relative to this is the use of nasal inhaler style applications, which apparently are very successful, I've heard, in Norway and in Taiwan. And there's all these other prophylactic measures that the rest of the world is trying.
Sure, you're not
a doctor,
et cetera, organization has endorsed what it is you're saying. It's a fight. You know the nature of this fight. Who has the most money wins. Who has the most influence wins.
Absolutely.
So you have to think of a strategy that people can wage their own war effectively and protect their children's health at the same time.
Right.
You can't win this war.
Well, we have to because now the kids are involved.
We can't win it.
That's where we have to draw a line.
It's well organized, it's well financed, and it is supported by the government.
Yep, so, David versus Goliath all over again.
All right, there you are. Well, think about it, and let's talk about it again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Great talking with you as always.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in, everybody. This is what we ought to be doing. None of this, you know, take a 2-minute shot at a subject and you're out. No, that doesn't do any good. We're going to get to the nitty-gritty, and that is where the fun starts. Have a good weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things to your life, and absolutely avoid those who don't. Okay? And let's meet up again with each other next week. Bye-bye.